Blog Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Gangeesh with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. We meet every week to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they have personally made that transition from traditional marketing over to revenue marketing. And I'm so excited to introduce this week's guest. It's Alex Pelletier of Quizio. I have known Alex, two, 3 years now.
I met him at
we were at a Marketo, I think it was probably the first ever Marketo user conference, and this guy gets up to speak with this beautiful French-Canadian accent. I'm like, oh, that guy knows his stuff. And since that day, Alex, you probably don't know this, but I've been angling to get you on the show. Let me tell you a little bit about Alex, and then we're going to pick his brain and find out what he knows. He has over 13 years of experience in the digital marketing world and has spent really the last 6 years focusing on lead management optimization, which is a lifetime in this industry. He's currently Director Revenue Marketing at Quizio, where he is implementing strategies to better align sales and marketing and boost revenue growth using marketing automation tools. In his spare time, like he has a whole lot of it, Alex writes his own thought leadership blog about lead management optimization and marketing automation, and he also leads the Salesforce user group in Montreal. So, Alex, welcome to the show, finally.
Yeah, well, it's a great pleasure for me to be here, Debbie. I totally remember 2 years or 3 years ago when we met at the Marketo User Summit. So it's been a while, but it's really a fun journey.
It has been a fun journey. So, and it was also really interesting, Alex, when you and I were talking about, okay, what would you like to talk about on the radio show? Because on this radio show, I don't typically pre-plan the topics. I just meet really interesting people who are doing really phenomenal things in the area of revenue marketing. And I said, just, you know, come on board. And Alex gave me a list of about 10 things. But I think, Alex, really what you're most passionate about really is kind of two things. Number one is, just what does it really take to get up and running with marketing automation? So we'll do the first half of our discussion around that. And then the second half is really, once you have it up and running, how do you engineer this to revenue marketing success? So why don't we start with the getting up and running, and why don't you tell us why you guys bought marketing automation and kind of what was going on and what are the lessons learned to get up and running?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I can just give a little background about Quizio, the company
perfect.
I work for.
Yeah.
And Quizio is a software as a service company. So we're having a software and a SaaS model. And typically our clients are across like 250 countries around the world. And we don't meet them. So we really need to be efficient in selling worldwide with, you know, other communication means. So, and our customer base is really savvy, marketing savvy, because we're selling our software to marketers. So it was really important for us to be meaningful whenever
you have to be so careful when you are using this stuff for marketers, man. You have to be on your P's and Q's and follow all the best practices.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we why we at some point decided to go ahead and do some, I mean, it was not called revenue marketing at the time, but try to automate or to implement marketing automation. We had one. Well, there was a couple of challenges, I should say. So the first one was, you know, all the leads were typically end off to salespeople, and there was no real qualification. So just to give you a typical example, we were running like webcasts. And with partners, with website partners, and we were receiving, let's say, an Excel spreadsheet with about 300 names, and we were giving those 300 names to our 6 salespeople. So each of them were getting 50, and on the top of their list and things that they were doing. So typically, what was happening is that all of those leads were actually, they were left alone in the database, and there was no real follow-up done, and they were cherry-picking, actually, which one they wanted to follow up with. So that was the main problem we had. So we said we need to do something to make sure that we're actually only giving them the most relevant leads. So, And the other challenge that we had was as well the you know, marketing operation more oriented, but it was like the time it took for us to process those leads because, you know, typically your partner is hosting the webinar and then it takes 2-3 days or 4 days before they actually send you the file, and then you take a couple days to actually clean it up and then put it into your CRM system and then give it to salespeople, which they take maybe a day or two before starting contacting them. So it was resulting in losing the real momentum from the moment of the person is actually interested in the webinar topic. Then, let's say 10 days later, they receive a first touch point, which is totally too late, in my honest opinion. So we had this kind of lead processing. It was very long. So we really used marketing automation to solve that as well.
Excellent. And so when did you guys implement? You did Marketo, correct?
Yes, exactly. So that's a good question. So my background as well is I'm in the industry, so I've been following like pretty much all the big players in this space. And we decided to implement Marketo and at the beginning, typically because of the ease of use. And I was having a very limited team here. So just to put it in perspective, it's always good to mention this, but we started here implementing marketing automation. We were two people in the marketing department. So it was myself, and I had a marketing coordinator, which was dealing more with publishers and the deals that were actually signed to manage those, let's say, webinars or white paper stuff. And I was managing more like the operational side of the marketing. So it was really mandatory for us to have a tool that was easy to use, that we were able to generate all our like assets that we need to run our campaigns rather than wait for the IT department or rather to wait for a consultant to do some programming and stuff like that. So this is why we actually go up with Marketo.
Okay. And when was that?
We started the implementation, I think it's September or October 2009. So it's going to be two years.
Okay.
Sorry, at Acquisio. Yeah. So we started small, and now it's a bit more sophisticated now.
Okay. So let me ask you this, Alex, because I think people are always interested. If they've never implemented any marketing automation system before, I always see there's what I call they don't know what they don't know. So what are some lessons learned or some aha moments that you might be able to share with our listening audience around if you're implementing your first marketing automation system?
Well, the first thing I think is, which is very important to put in perspective, is this is going to be a journey. So you're not, when you're thinking about marketing automation, you're not thinking about an overnight quick fix. It's really something that you're going to start just really, really small. And then you're going to build on top of it, add new campaigns, add new features, add new programs. And this way, you're going to be able to get to the end result, which is actually getting better qualified leads to your salespeople. But what I can say is, you know, if you choose the right tool, it can be done easily for integrating with your CRM software, and that really helps. And then you start slow, but you make, like, small steps, but you complete them, and then you're going to achieve the whole process at the end.
And don't you also find that as you implement and begin using a marketing automation system, your learning curve just it goes up exponentially?
Well, yeah, a bit. You need to, there's many, many things that you could do. But again, if you go back to the principle of you know, what's the objective of using it is to save time into your operation and to generate better qualified leads. So you start with those little goals, and then you can go more sophisticated afterwards. And there's plenty of leadership around this, and this is where I got all my inspiration, actually. So I was reading a lot of blogs, and I was able to get some ideas and now try to look at them and how I could implement them. But it's really step-by-step process.
And the other thing that I like that you said, I really, really liked, is that, well, really two things. It's a journey. It's not an overnight fix. That's number one. And number two, you said two simple things. save time, and get better qualified leads. And so I think a lot of times what I've seen is people, they kind of get a little overwhelmed with the implementation, and they kind of lose sight of those objectives. And so if you keep those objectives, you know, firmly in mind, and they're your guiding principles for everything that you do, that allows you to take small steps, but you're taking the right small steps. So really, really like that comment. So
yeah.
Let's move over to the fantastic things that you guys are doing with marketing automation in your company. So I know that when we talked, you were, you know, you wanted to talk about maybe a little bit around how you guys are doing lead nurturing, maybe a bit around what you're doing for scoring, and certainly what you're doing around tracking and metrics. So let's tell us a little bit about how you've approached lead nurturing, Alex.
Yeah. Okay, so lead nurturing, and again, I can talk in terms of version 1 and version 2. We started small by having only one track to nurture our leads. So basically all the leads that were coming in that were not, let's say, sales ready, we were giving them a series of touch points from emails, mainly emails actually, and so that was the track, the general track. Then the way we evolved those nurturing tracks, it was by defining different stage in the revenue cycle or stage in the sales cycle of the lead that we're actually we're contacting. So we decided to go with like early stage. Those are the people that basically probably not buying right now. They're just getting educational content. So that's what we're providing them. They're looking to get educated on our industry. And then we have the what we call the track D, which is mid stage. These people are more advanced in their buy cycle. They are actually, we have them as a stage of opportunity in our Salesforce. So starting from the opportunity stage, we have targeted content, which is more around, tips to help to sell our product to your boss. We have, e-books like things you need to know about PPC management tools and stuff like that. So that are really more focused on what our offering is. And then we have a track C, which is for late stage people. And that track, we put stuff really, really about Acquisio, like why Acquisio is better and type of things. Also, some customer testimonials. So this is very important when you're later in the sales cycle. You want to reinforce that to your lead that they're making the right decision. And by doing this, we use a customer testimonial. We have videos and we have like case studies. And that kind of material comes further in the sales cycle. So now we're running with two different tracks for nurturing campaigns. And the next step for me will be to actually tailor the content of each of those tracks more to the persona of person. Because everybody knows that it's the more complex your solution is, you're selling to many, many people at the same time. So what we would like to develop now is to have content for maybe the users, the people that are using our solutions, so they have their set of problems. So we want to provide, answers through content. And the other people that are actually in the sales cycle are the decision makers. So sometimes it's a CFO, it's the owner of the agencies that are buying our product. And these people have more holistic view of their problems, more like the whole agency level problem. So we want to provide them targeted content. So we're not there yet. Again, going back to my journey example, we're actually building on top of everything. And now that we have three tracks, we're going to be having two different personas to address different needs in terms of communication. So that's what we do.
Yeah, Alex, I think that's a great example for our listening audience of how you don't do everything overnight, but you just kind of build into it. How long did it take you to develop the three tracks? What was that evolution like?
Okay, it was not so long because we ran like the first year with one track. So now the second year we had experience with the software, so it was faster. And then I would say that to implement those three tracks, and the content was built during the year, so that was not really an issue here. So it probably took us like let's say 2 to 3 weeks to really change the marketing automation to reflect that new procedure. But we had done some thinking, and I've done reading about it, like, constantly over the year to see where nurturing tracks we're evaluating in the industry. So you gather information while you're doing your let's say first version, and then the implementation was probably like 2-3 weeks to put it in the system. So
okay, excellent. Now, one of the things that you also said that I really want to key in on for a few minutes is, you know, you talked about building out the content, and that's not something that we had talked about in the pre-interview. But I think people are really, really interested in how you get content developed, because if you have one nurturing campaign, you know, you can kind of stay ahead of that from a content perspective. But having multiple campaigns, and then especially once you start bringing in personas and once you start, you know, tying everything to the buy cycle, which you've already done, but tell us a little bit about content production and how do you handle that being a small company?
Yeah. Okay. No, that's a great question. I mean, that's when I did the first implementation of Nurturing Track, it took me 3 months, but most of that time was just getting the content produced. So, but what we're doing at Ecwezio in terms of marketing, we do sponsor a lot of ebooks and webinars from publishers in our industry. So typically what happens is that the publisher is going to produce a webinar or an ebook, and after a certain period of time, we're going to be able to redistribute this content. So for us, majority of our content right now is produced outside of our own internal marketing team. So what was interesting in that model is that first you get leads from the publisher because this is what we're buying, and then second we're getting the content to use in our nurturing program. So that was the double advantage of using this strategy. But now you're right, we're going to be evolving towards persona stuff. So it's going to be it's not usually something that publishers are doing. They're going more large audience. So now we're going to hire a full-time copywriter internally to get, you know, this content produced, to help with emails, production, landing page, copywriting, and stuff like that. So for us, it's been key. So luckily, Ecwezio is growing pretty fast these days. So I'm going to have the budget to hire a copywriter full-time just to produce this content.
I think that's excellent. And I think, again, you know, at some point, you just have to realize that when you begin this journey to revenue marketing, at whatever stage that you're at, to Alex's point, it's a journey. It's not something you do in your spare time. It requires full-time focus. And at some point, you just have to have the budget to get the right kind of skills on board so that all these things can happen. So I've seen a lot of companies get to the place where you are right now where they realize content is king. It's really the engine, for the fuel of demand generation, and you just really cannot be successful without it. Especially, I think, in B2B, I think that's especially true. So, well, thank you for sharing with us around kind of what was going on with content. Now, one of the things that, again, I find people struggling with, and, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, Alex, you read a lot, I read a lot. You know, we've been in the industry for a long time. Things like lead nurturing, you'd think people would have figured out by now, but they still ask so many questions about it. And the same thing is true with lead scoring. I guess it was about this time a year ago, I was trying to do, I don't know, it was a white paper or something, and I wanted to just interview a bunch of people who had implemented lead scoring. And, oh, my gosh, I had a hard time getting any group of people that really would even talk with, well, we're just not where we need to be. Well, it's not quite right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing with lead scoring at Ecwezio and kind of what the journey to a successful lead score has looked like for you guys.
Yeah, no, great point. Actually, lead scoring is another it's another topic that is hard to get your head around, like at the beginning. And I remember, but again, we played it in phases. So the first time we implemented Marketo, I remember doing a spreadsheet with some, you know, you go the best way you think and you put numbers and they're going to be the score for such or such activities. But the reality is that you have really no idea before you get this thing started. So we tried to start with, you know, some thought leadership that was around, and Marketo was pretty good at providing thought leadership around how they're doing it internally. So I kind of started with their model, and then what I did was just one general scoring. So I was getting scored on demographic information I had in my database. Like for us, it's important to know if the company is an advertiser or an agency, so that's different. So we're scoring on the title, for example. that kind of information, the countries where they're from, because some countries are not really serving them right now. So we use demographic information to try to understand the profile of the person and if that's a fit for us. And then we use behavior scoring. And behavior for us is really important. It's you're really tracking what the level of interest of the person that is actually coming to you. And among behaviors that we're tracking, there's stuff like, emails, if they open, if they click, we're actually decreasing the score if somebody is unsubscribing or the email bounces. We also have scored on specific pages of the website. We're decreasing score for people that are actually looking at job opportunities. So we're doing that kind of stuff, frequency. And we were combining those two scores. So that was one global score, and we had a threshold. So whenever demographic plus behavior was above 65 points, we were sending that out to the sales team. But now what we did is actually that was the first version, first thing. And I think the key there is to get some feedback from your salespeople for that, for your qualification team. So if they're telling you that they're getting leads that are above the threshold and those leads are not necessarily ready or they're not good, then what you need to do is to go back to your model and try to tweak it to say, oh, okay, they got score maybe too much for emails, so I'm just going to decrease this. So that's the way you can really try to tweak it. And that's an ongoing process. But what we did for our second generation of lead scoring is that we added a third type of score, and that type of score is what I call the buying intent. So we have identified specific behaviors that are most likely a good indicator that this person is in a buying process. And those behaviors would include something like when they visit like the pricing page, when they visit specific white papers, when they download them, because depending on the topic of white papers, you can tell how far the person, well, you can assume or guess, but usually it's pretty good. And so that kind of third dimension to our scoring was also interesting. And instead of having one global score and having one threshold, we split them up. So we decided to, if somebody has a really good demographic, even if they're not acting too much on our website, we still want to talk to them. So we're going to trigger that lead to the sales qualification team as well. And then vice versa, if we have somebody that the demographic is not there because they're not that big or they're not exactly what we're looking for, but they're really, really active, we still want to talk to them. So this way we build a model that allows us to trigger depending if either the demographic, the buying intent score, or the behavior score gets above its own threshold. So it's kind of a matrix that we did, and now it's showing us more targeted profile, more active profile that we can send.
So this is really interesting. I like what you've done here, and that's one of the things. Anytime I facilitate a lead scoring workshop for a client, I always turn to the marketers and say, this lead score is all about buying intent. It's not about you gathering data. Right, and there's a huge difference. And I've frequently consulted with clients where marketing had a lead score put together. They thought it was pretty good. You know, sales was kind of on board. But when you really, really, really have them take a look at lead score as, to your point, you know, is it the right fit and is there an intent to buy, that just changes a whole dynamic. So when you say you split the score, right, so do you have like a score for firmographic and a score for buying intent? How have you broken it apart?
Yes, exactly. That's a good question. We do have a score for each of them. Okay, so and again, instead of adding them up and having just one threshold, we have a matrix. It's too bad we're on the radio. I cannot really show the matrix, but I would be I would be happy to do so. But the if the buying intent score is high and the other twos are low, I want still to pass this lead to my qualification team because, you know, they're showing interest in buying our product.
Okay. So let me see. So you have three scores. You've got number one, the firmographic. Is it the right kind of company? Does it fit, you know, our revenue? Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. It's firmographically, is it the right fit for us? And then you get a score just based on any kind of just cumulative behavior. And then you have a separate score on buying intent, which is probably associated with them hitting some piece of content that tells you, wow, they're really interested. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a great idea. I love that. And so when the salesperson gets the lead, do you guys use Salesforce.com?
Yes, we do use Salesforce. Yeah, and we were using Salesforce prior to use Marketo Solution. It's instrumental into the whole, let's say, lead management process.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to see her in a minute. How does this score show up to the salesperson? I'm a salesperson. I either get an alert or I take a look at do you guys use Sales Insight?
We do use Sales Insight.
Okay.
But the one thing that I realized at some point is at the beginning of the process, we had the marketing team and there was the sales team. So there was only sales executive. So what I realized is that if you're trying to teach all of your salespeople to really understand the score and really, you know, get their feeling around it, it's a little bit harder. So, and because there's a lot of people, different way of thinking, different way of viewing this. So instead, what we decided to do is that we have added a new role in the team. So it's called Sales Development Representative. It could be called sales, telemarketing, or lead qualification position. But what we did is that we opened a new role, and this person sits in the marketing team. And the role is to actually qualify every sales, what we call like sales ready, or now we call them marketing ready leads. But the point is that now we have one person. No, there are two now, but actually they're giving us closer feedback because they are the front line all the time.
Yep.
And this way was really more easier for us to gather feedback and tweak our things. But back to your question, they actually see in Salesforce the score as, you know, custom fields that we have implemented there. And they use Sales Insight too.
But they see three scores, right?
Yes, they do.
So they see a score on firmographic, they see a score on behavior, and they see a score on buying intent. Now, is it a grade or is it a score?
I leave it as a score.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's...
So it could be like 40 points, 65 points, 100 points, something like that?
Exactly.
Okay, excellent. And so when did you add the buying intent to your lead scoring model?
You mean when? I'm sorry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you add the buying intent score?
During this winter, like I think more February, early March, I kind of came up with this this new implementation. So we're about like 3 to 4 months in with this new intent to buy, and it still needs to be tweaked. and it's not something we're getting right always from the beginning. And I'm getting feedbacks, and more we're adding content, we can actually measure if this content is really an indicator of a buying intent, and then we can tweak the rules.
Okay. So what do the salespeople think about the buying intent score?
To be truly honest, I don't have a ton of feedback yet on the buying intent score. so it's probably I should be having more feedback meetings these days. But
I love this. I have to tell you, Alex, I love this idea because I'm with you. Even if you give a firmographic score, okay, the right kind of company we should talk to. And number two, if you then talk about behavior, still, you know, a cumulative score on behavior is not as good as also adding this buying intent, which is always like, what is the number one thing that they can do online that tells you, wow, this is somebody who has a big intention? And instead of adding it, burying it into a score, which it could be accumulated from other things, I love the idea of having this buying intent as a separate score. I think that's really, really smart. So I'll have to follow up with you in another couple of months and kind of see how that's going. I think that's actually quite brilliant. So tell me what you guys are doing around what are you doing around reporting and tracking and that kind of thing.
Okay, in terms of reporting, We do use pretty much all our reporting in Salesforce. We do have there's one thing I'm dying to try using. It's the revenue cycle analysis module for Marketo.
Yeah, revenue cycle analytics. Yes.
Yeah, I would love to use that, but I've seen a lot of presentations. So right now I'm using pretty much Salesforce to do my reporting, and we've been able to see a couple of interesting things, like when we were reporting on our campaigns and activities. So at the beginning, before we really made the difference between leads and sales ready and leads that are not. So just in terms of terminology, we call prospects internally the names that we have in the database that are not sales ready, and we call the one that are sales ready, we call them leads. So we've been very focusing on the terminology here, so that everybody at sales meeting or at even the board, when we talk about leads, we talk all about the same thing. It's not just the name I got from the Twitch, or it's not just the name that I got from the webinar. It's really a lead that was qualified. So now I'm measured. My objectives are based on number of leads, number of prospects I'm generating, number of opportunities. So those are the numbers that we're tracking. And so we've been able to see very interesting things in the reports once we separated those two concepts. Because at first sight, we were running, like, let's say, a lead source report where we had 48%, I think, of our leads coming from webinars. So I'm sorry, prospects coming from webinars. So that was very interesting. But then when we did the segmentation with leads, we just realized that the one that were actually sales ready leads, there were only 4% coming from webinars, and I think it was 40% coming from trade shows. So it really showed up some two levels of understanding in our data, because before that we would have been taking decision based on just, you know, the general names that we had in the database. But now we're taking decision more about the one that are qualified. So that's some dimension that we were able to add when we started to implement this kind of process. And
I think that's really important. Again, to your point, it doesn't take anything sophisticated to get to this kind of reporting. You know, Marketo and Salesforce.com have a great integration. These are the kinds of things that Marketo can feed into Salesforce, and then you can actually pull reports on. So, but again, it's just kind of thinking, right? It's kind of really putting yourself more into a business analyst role and really kind of thinking about where is the biggest impact on revenue. So you're right. At first blush, you may say, well, 48% of all of our webinars come from prospects. Woo-hoo, you know, we're doing a great job. But when you take a look at what percentage of those are actually sales ready and where the sales ready leads come from, to your point, it just makes a huge difference. And for a lot of marketers, that requires a new way of thinking. It requires business analysis skills. It requires any number of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it was something that was for us interesting to discover, because we were doing a lot of trade shows, and we speak to other marketers and everything, and they say, why are you doing trade shows? I mean, you're a software as a service company, and you're actually selling all over the world, so you don't need to go and spend money and lose time in trade shows. But then we just brought the numbers that, you know what, trade shows are good because they're providing us sales-ready leads, so that's what really matters. And
that's
if
exactly
I was just
right.
Looking, if you just look at the ultimate numbers, of course I'm just getting 50 leads from a trade show and 300 or 500 leads from a webinar. But then I don't, you know, the one that are converting are the one that I get at a trade show. So that's why we were able at least to support our decision. We had the gut feeling it was good to do it, but now we had numbers to support it. So
yeah, you absolutely know. So, you know, one of the things that people always seem to struggle with, Alex, is, again, how do you get a common set of lead definitions that everyone across the company uses? And so when you say sales-ready lead, everyone knows exactly what that means. What does it take to get that common set of definitions at your company?
Yeah, I think what it takes is it's something which I think it's mandatory to have some kind of success. It's really to have this initiative to be supported by both sales and marketing executives, okay? Because what you want to get, when you want to get your common definition of lead, is really having both teams and both VPs at the table and discussing, okay, for me, when a company has this profile and has shown that kind of interest, that's important. And that's what I call a lead. Before that, I don't want to hear about it. And then you have the marketing on the other end that is telling, okay, but if we're doing targeted campaigns for such or such profile, blah, blah, blah. So this way we were able to actually build this definition. But again, it's sales being sales and marketing being marketing. It's something that is moving. Sometimes it's changing a bit if we're getting lower in terms of leads that we're working on. Sometimes we're just, you know, being more easy on passing more leads. So it's not something that is going to be in concrete that's not moving. The other part that I was very lucky is that my boss, which is the CMO and the co-founder, was also in charge of sales. So I had the one person that was, you know, wearing the two hats. So it was a little bit easier, I guess, to get, you know, an agreement and to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So that's, you know, some companies do have that privilege, I guess. But,
Take your good luck where you can find it, right?
Yeah.
There certainly are enough other issues, but you're right. I mean, I think that's excellent that you're working with one person who wears both hats and really can see both sides of the equation, and then how this can work across both areas, you know, again, not just one. So let me ask you this question about metrics. How do you report to senior management? What metrics do you report up, and how often, and kind of what does that look like? What do you report?
We do have what we call a marketing dashboard, and in this, the for me, on the more on the revenue side, there's like 6 points in the database that we're looking. First, number of prospects. So that helps to know if we're actually doing the right activities in the marketing to generate the names at the entry of the funnel. Second point is number of marketing leads, how many that were actually qualified or at least above score threshold to be qualified by the marketing team. Third point is the sales lead, number of sales leads that we pass to sales. Then we go number of opportunities generated out of those leads. We go number of demo, so that would be the fifth point in our data set. And the sixth one is number of clients. So in this way, obviously, I run some ratios, so how many sales leads converted into opportunities and vice versa. So I have all the ratio for all of these six numbers, but this is what really we're tracking. So we're trying to have a point in each six stages of the funnel, and that's very important. And now we can, by using those metrics, we can actually try to forecast, you know, how many leads we're going to need, because it's, you know, at the end, it's a numbers game, and the CFO comes down to us. Okay, guys, we need to do so many revenues. Okay, so the average revenues by client is X. Okay, now I can move backwards through the top of my funnel to know, okay, if my ratio is 50%, 15%, whatever, then I can know how many leads I'm going to need in the next quarter. And then I can know, oh, if I need to generate 5,000 leads, then, wow, I need to do those and those and those activities. Or I need to tweak my nurturing, or I need to do a special promo, or I need to do something. But at least we can forecast using those six data points that we're looking at.
And I will share with all of our listeners that what Alex just explained to you is the ultimate definition of a revenue marketer. A revenue marketer is an individual. They're using marketing automation tightly integrated with CRM. And they can not just report on revenue impact, but they can also forecast revenue impact. So the CEO, the VP of sales, comes to Alex and says, we need to do this amount of revenue this quarter. And Alex knows, based on his conversions, exactly what he's got to get lined up. And then together with the VP of sales, they can actually forecast what they're going to do. Because, again, they have the ratios, and they also have their waterfall, which to me is just beautiful. And, Alex, you know, as simple as you make it sound, there's not a whole lot of marketers who are at that level yet.
Mm. Yeah, I know it's hard, and we still need to tweak and get more precision in those forecasts. And as a matter of fact, just as a side note, we, like last May, for some reason, I guess we didn't plan properly, but we had like no real big activities going on in May for the month of May. So we kind of timed our things, two or three big activities in April, nothing in May, and we're back in June. And we really saw an impact into the sales that actually resulting in June and now early July, because we had this month that we kind of forgot to plan an activity. So we had a down in our top level of the funnel, and we saw a down in the bottom line like 1 month or 45 days after. So now we really fully realize that it's important, and there's no magic in there. If the CFO asks you to get those numbers, well, you're going to need those number of leads at the top, period, and based on your historical conversion. So either you change your conversion or either you have those number of leads. So,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
At least you know where to work. Yeah.
So I have a detailed question. So you go from prospects to marketing qualified lead to sales lead to opportunity to demo to client. So what is a marketing qualified lead is something that has landed on the SDR's desk to work on, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And then when the SDR hands it over to sales, that's called a sales lead, correct?
Exactly.
Okay, and I got to tell you, I like this definition, the way you got it done. We are seeing a heavy preponderance of marketing organizations bring in the SDR, sales development rep function, to further qualified. And the way they're defining it is exactly what you have done, Alex. They're saying that, you know, when it reaches a certain score, it goes to the SDR. That's called a marketing qualified lead. When the SDR further qualifies that based on whatever criteria you have, that gets passed to sales, and that becomes a sales lead or whatever you want to call it. And then it just goes to your typical opportunity, you know, whatever you have, like you have demo and then the client. So I really, really, really like that. And I just love the way that you have created a really simple structure for the definition of this. It just makes great sense. I really, really, really like that a lot. So let's talk about lessons learned, because clearly you've been in this market for, you know, close to 6 years now. You've seen a lot. You've experienced a lot. You've seen the growth that's in the market. What do you think are some lessons learned that you could share with a marketer who's just beginning this journey?
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think there's a few things that somebody should expect. And again, I want to reiterate this thing. It's a journey. So I think we mentioned it a lot today, but it's really important. So that's the first thing you should be expecting. And don't sell your boss the idea of having marketing automation. It's gonna it's gonna reduce all the costs, and by magic tomorrow you're gonna be more efficient. It's gonna take time, and the more you eat it, the more you're gonna like it, the more you will want to do it. So just plan your budget accordingly to say, okay, if we're moving to that direction, it's not like we're buying a software. We're buying a whole new methodology of working and managing our activities, and that's going to require support, and that's going to require some investment in terms of people, because we want to actually we want to use it better. And when I say that, it's because you're going to see the results. This is where you will want to go, definitely. Second thing, it really needs to be supported by both sales and marketing executives. Because prior to be at Acquisio, I implemented other marketing automation at another company, and the initiative was just from marketing. And so salespeople were not seeing the value. They were not happy with scoring stuff. They were not believing in it. So it was really hard to get things rolling. So that's number two advice would be to really make sure that both, like, VPs, sales and marketing, are actually agreeing. They see the whole value, and you need to position it for salespeople that it's actually there to help them. Because, again, one roadblock I was facing is that salespeople were saying, oh, now you're not giving us enough leads, because we used to get those 300, now you're just giving me 50. But then I was telling them, but the 50 ones I'm giving you, you better call them all, because they're qualified rather than being unqualified. So there's a shift to be done. Sometimes if you have, like, a organization that have been there for a while and they have their way to work. So that's something you're going to need to work. But if both VPs are on the same table, that's fine. The other thing, it's the current processes and responsibility of your marketing team will change. It will evolve. You will be more focused into every time you do an activity, it will be recorded, it will be tracked, it needs to be part of a program, it needs to be part of the whole of methodology that you're putting in place. So that's something. Salespeople are going to need to be trained as well on the new process. They need to understand that. And they also this is a great opportunity to give them the ability to provide feedback, because you will want their feedback. And we have, you know, I'm sitting at both marketing and sales meeting. Even though I'm director of revenue marketing, I'm sitting at the sales meeting, a weekly call, because I want to share what we've been doing in terms of improvement or change in the lead nurturing or scoring and stuff. And I want to hear them back. And this is where actually I'm learning that such or such behavior is not a real good behavior to track. So this is very important to open a discussion with them. And the last point we talked a bit as well is new content will need to be developed. So that's I've mentioned a few strategies to get started with this, but that's something you need to consider. Again, it's something that will need to change.
I love this summary. I think it's excellent. And if I could, let me say it again. It's a journey. You need to get support from both sales and marketing executives. You need to understand you're now going to undertake different processes and responsibilities for marketing will change. Salespeople need to be trained in the process, and the integration between the two teams needs to strengthen. And then, of course, new content needs to be created. So I think those are very, very, very wise words. And, you know, it's words that we talk about, I think, on every WRMR radio show, but it's just true time and time and time again. Well, Alex, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on the show with us today. We covered a lot of areas. We talked about, you know, what was your decision to buy marketing automation, kind of what drove that. You shared with us kind of how you approach developing nurturing campaigns, what you're doing around content. Love the discussion on scoring. I got some really great ideas that I want to talk to some people about, like tomorrow or Monday on that. Your discussion on metrics, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And you have to be able to do that with these metrics. Just make it real simple and start tracking to it. And we didn't talk very much about it, but you certainly did mention, you know, you've got to have that really, really tight integration with CRM. So I just want to thank you so much for your insight today. I really enjoyed having you on the show.
Well, that's a real pleasure, Debbie. I'm really, really happy that I was able to make it here and to speak to your show, because I was following you as well as a thought leader, and that's a great honor for me.
Well, thank you so much. And everyone, join us next week on July 28th. We'll be talking to Renee Picard of Quero, and it's going to be another awesome interview with a revenue marketer. Have a great week.